Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is for you. Hey, I want to welcome you to another episode of Funnel Cut Grill, or the FCPX Grill, if you need to look it up alphabetically on iTunes. This is episode number 45 with Gordon Fleming. Now, this is a little bit unusual because the show has been very much about editors, and either editors that use Funnel Cut and a couple that have not, Steve Miller being one. And this is it's sort of a byproduct of my crazy schedule. So I want to apologize if this feels like I'm kind of cutting corners. Quite honestly, I sort of am. I've been on the road for a week, and I am working with Gordon Fleming. Now, Gordon is one of my clients, and I think a lot of people wouldn't normally, you know, be very upfront and vocal about who their clients are for fear of being poached, but I'm not really worried about that. Gordon is a great guy. I've known Gordon for a long time, and he is the, what is his title? I believe he said he was the vice president of sales and marketing or something at a software company. The company is called QAD. They're based in Santa Barbara, California. Now, Gordon has become a great friend. I count my friendship with him as something that I very much cherish over the years. A great guy and wicked, wicked smart. You know, a lot of times in corporate production, there is a lot of frustration, I'll say. You know, sometimes the discussion can become somewhat derogatory in reference to the suits, like, oh, they don't know anything. Gordon, on more than one occasion, has set me in my place when I'll say, oh, well, that, you know, I can't do that. He'll say, well, give me the mouse. I'll show you how to do it. He's also one of the most talented people I've ever met in terms of doing animations in PowerPoint. He does amazing stuff, and he does it with a fluidity and an ease that you would expect from somebody who is a veteran in the, you know, communication arts business. But it's not actually his job. He gravitates towards technology, and he also shoots and edits video for fun. Luckily for me, he still hires me professionally, but that's, you know, another story. So I've been working for Gordon for the last week, and tomorrow is Friday, and I'm a little bit behind in terms of getting episodes recorded. And I said, Gordon, come be on my podcast. And he's like, oh, okay, I'd love to. So I think you're going to enjoy this. And again, I apologize if it seems like I'm cutting corners, but he has some very poignant opinions and stuff about technology, about communication, about the language of communication in the, going forward in the future. So trust me when I say I think you're going to enjoy this interview. Also, Premium Beats, thank you. We're going to mention that a little later on in the show. So let's go to Gordon Fleming from QAD. So, Gordon, first of all, thank you for agreeing to do this. I feel a little weird because we're sharing this microphone. I've never really had a conversation this close to you.
Well, I think it's not only that weird. I think we're in a dark and dingy hotel room with the blinds shut, and we're sharing a microphone. That's more weird. And our knees are touching. That's what's weird.
Yeah. So, Gordon, I've known you. I think the first time you and I worked together, like actually on the same thing, was a little stand-up comedy silliness in North Beach. Do you remember that night?
Is that North Beach, Miami?
Yeah. Is that? Oh, it's South
Beach.
I think
it's South Beach.
There we go.
Yeah. I do remember that. I think that we had a show on, and due to basically lack of planning, lack of entertainment, and lack of content, we decided that what would be a good idea would be to take a camera down to South Beach and interview people,
because not North Beach.
Oh, South Beach.
Actually, we have shot in North Beach too. Do you remember when we shot?
We have.
On the Segway?
Yes, I do. North Beach, San Francisco.
Yes.
So, orienting everyone, South Beach, Miami, Florida. So we took a camera down there with lights, and I felt that something magic might happen. I believe if I could read body language of yourself and everybody else involved, they felt not much would happen, but actually we had a great time. It appears that if you turn the lights on a camera on South Beach, stuff happens.
Yeah, I remember Hillary calling me saying, okay, so this is what we're going to do. And I'm like, no, that won't work. That's not going to work. And she goes, well, Yeah, you'll have to get to know Gordon. I think it'll be okay.
Well, I think it's something that in working with you over the years, Chris, I have seen that you are never short in venturing an opinion on things and generally giving solid ideas as to when things will not work. On this occasion, rarely, you were wrong.
I was definitely wrong, yeah. There was definitely a magic that happened, but in all seriousness, I've said this many times, the star of that video was Miami. And the idiots on the street.
Yeah, no, you've said that. When I talk to people, I point out myself as the star of that video.
Yes, I do understand that. So I've been editing for your company for, I think this is my 15th year doing...
Without being found out.
Without being found out. I don't know what that means. And I think that South Beach thing was, I want to say like 2004? Something like that?
I think it would be 2004, 2005, probably 2004, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, and we've done many different types of projects, usually involving me directing and or editing, and you very much enjoy being in front of the camera, don't you?
I do enjoy being in front of the camera.
But that's not your job. You are, well, although... We might want it to be your job.
No, that's not what, your job.
What is your role at QAD, the company?
So I'm Chief Marketing Officer at QAD. So my responsibilities are to look at what markets we should serve, what products we should deliver to those markets, how we package and price those products, how we communicate to market, how we go to market with those, and also sales enablement, how we bring our organization up to speed to be able to take those products to market. And our marketplace is global manufacturers.
Right. Now, on this show, you seem an unlikely guest, but what I happen to know about you is not only are you one of those evil suits that quite often we refer to, but you are one of the most technologically astute. You are certainly the most technologically astute client that I've ever dealt with. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about Final Cut Pro.
Well, I think I can probably help you there. And, you know, I think that, as a client service issue, being a sycophant never goes any wrong. And I suspect I'm here because it's one day before you go to air. You're with me in New Orleans. Episode 45. I'm the only one available.
Well, there's a little bit of that, and you blew me off yesterday, so now the crunch is on.
Right.
So
one take. We're doing this in one take.
Yeah, no, that's right. One take, definitely. So what is your background in working with video and video production? How did you get started with this fascination of yours?
I think I would say as a caveat, as you know, Chris, it's I don't do it for a living, so you're not at threat.
Well, in actuality, technically, you do.
Oh, I get paid, I suppose.
You do get paid, and it's an interesting facet of it because in modern marketing, video is very much a part of what we do. So you do have to have a certain vocabulary and understanding of the process. And I think you excel because there's no mystery to the technology. You actually, I mean, there have been multiple times when I've said, Gordon, I can't do that. And you'll say, move over, let me show you.
Of course, calling the bluff always works there. Well, you raised a number of things we moved through. Let me go back to your initial thing of how did I get interested in that? So maybe by a bit of background. So I've not always been in marketing in the software industry. So I started my career with a real job as an electronics engineer. So by discipline...
Is that to imply that this is now not a real job?
It's a lot less real. It's a lot less dirty hands.
Okay,
let's
gotcha.
Put it that way. So I started off my life as an electronics engineer. I worked in the UK and various defense companies. I ended up working in West Africa. On telecommunication systems and satellite links, sending data back to the UK. Somehow my career shifted initially into corporate finance and then into sales and marketing in the software industry. But I've always had an interest in broadcast and telecommunications. So I was very familiar with the mechanics of video and broadcast television from probably around about the 80s. So I have some familiarity with, you know, video waveforms and vectorscopes and, you know, how cameras work, how Vidicons used to work and things like that. Then a large pause in my sort of, if you like, technical awareness occurred, and then video, to your point, has come back into my sort of sphere of influence, as I now am in an area where I want to use video to communicate. I want to put things, stage things for events that you work with us very often, put things up on the World Wide Web, which I hear is gaining in popularity. You're right, so I'm interested. From a personal perspective, I always had an interest in photography, and I think that has morphed itself also into an interest in cinematography. So I guess I'm a frustrated cinematographer and a frustrated editor. And in an ideal world, I don't know if you have ever seen one-man bands, you know, the guy that has the cymbals between his legs, the sort of drum on his back, the mouth organ, whatever. My ideal model would be that I would be in movies, shoot the movies, record the sound, do the whole lot. At the moment, I have the competence to do about 5% of those things.
I think you could probably do a lot more than 5%. So how is it in the last, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years that video has gained in importance in your job? Because it has escalated.
Well, you know, I think, and we've just come off a great show that you've been doing some fantastic video for us, where we have a widescreen projector that's, you know, 55 foot by 12, and we've been showing fantastic HD video across all of that all morning. And it's super impactful. It really helps communicate the message. But to answer your question in context of 10 years, I think 10 years ago, you could be at state of the art getting some PowerPoint slides projected on a big screen, 4:3 aspect ratio, and having somebody come and talk to them. I think in that period of time, I'm not sure of the dates when all of these things sort of have impacted, we've really seen that there was a point where, okay, now periodically screening a video on a topic gave an enormous impact. It engages people more. And I think part of that is because people have become jaded with some of the older media and mediums of communication. Of course, the challenge we have with television or with video per se is that the frame of reference people have as regards quality is very high, because people are used to watching movies, watching broadcast television that's had a lot of effort into it. So you really have to sort of be delivering at that standard. But it enables people, I think, to engage and take information more rapidly. And then, of course, probably in the last 6-7 years, the ability to deliver media basically in a ubiquitous environment over the web, through different channels like Vimeo and YouTube, delivering it to them on other media has become real as well. So, in my own line of work, we not only deliver marketing message and, for lack of a better term, commercials, but we also deliver training and multimedia and other communications vehicles using video. And it's a more engaging medium. And for an event like this, I mean, really, we're always trying to lift the bar to look more special. So at the moment, it would appear that the sort of the tendency to do bigger and more strange video than I would see at home on my very big television I got from Costco appears to be the approach. And so I think that's a very long-winded sort of chronology, but it's been sort of an insidious sort of gain in what happens. But the key uses that I see for video are reinforcing your message with something that's higher impact and surprises people. And I think that very often what we're working on with you is, okay, what is the surprise that we will do? What's the new thing? I can remember when we moved to the very powerful and exotic 16:9. So yeah, the video we'd see at a show was similar to the video that we'd see on those new widescreen TVs that made everyone look strange because the content wasn't in that aspect ratio.
Yeah, it actually feels very weird to just do 16:9 now, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So it fits up there. I think that, you know, delivery of that is interesting. I mean, I'm digressing, but delivery of that content is it's getting harder and harder, or not harder and harder, but it's it's still the people who are responsible for staging it, putting projectors and stuff, lag a little bit from the front end in being able to deliver it. We've had some interesting technical challenges at the beginning of this week. I think because of that, that there's a lag in the delivery capability versus the content capability.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go into that. That was more of just cabling and technology and wiring. But so when you and I started working together, I was heavily into Final Cut 7. That was my tool.
Yeah.
And you had Final Cut 7, right? Yeah. And you're always playing around and doing stuff. And then in the last, and I don't know if you know this, but the first paid job that I cut in Final Cut 10 was for you. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that, but thanks for using this as a guinea pig.
Sure, no problem. No, it was
Did we get a rebate?
Did it not work?
No, it worked.
Okay. No, you don't get a rebate. No, it was the one where we tipped the building.
I do remember that.
And, yeah. and you and Anton flew out of the corporate headquarters like superheroes.
From the secret sub-basement.
Right. So I did that, and that was a great experiment because there was definitely a deadline, it wasn't an insane deadline. I had a couple of weeks. And if something were to have gone horribly wrong, I could have punted and gone back to Final Cut 7. But then at Sales Workshop that year and also at Explore, and frankly, every event since then, I've been doing even the short turnaround edits in Final Cut. Now, as a consumer of these services, you don't care what it's done on, right?
I don't directly care what it's done on. Clearly, the end goal for us, and you mentioned sort of ridiculous deadlines. I don't think there's such a thing. I think there's just deadlines. So don't come crying in my ear with your problems. Just deliver it on time. But you know, from a consumption perspective, what we want is the thing delivered to time. I think that. You know, for me, I can remember when you pointed out, I can't remember which release in Final Cut, when they introduced multicam editing. And I think you showed me a piece you'd done outside for that. But that's certainly from a personal perspective, you know, way to my imagination. And it gives a lot more latitude. And I think it's been great to see Apple continue to add new capabilities like that into the baseline.
Yeah, I think that was 10.03, I believe, when the multicam. Yeah. So, so then I started using Final Cut 10, and nothing escapes you. I mean, if I show up with a new mouse pad or cable or hard drive, even if it's behind the computer, the first thing you do when you walk into a room is you start poking around and looking at stuff. So what did you think? What was your experience when you realized, why is he using that?
Well, you know, maybe I think it would be remiss for listeners not to point out that clearly I watch a lot of your material on the web, and I did watch the brief period of rebellion and moving to the other side that you went through. I didn't embrace that because I had put a lot of learning curve into Final Cut at that point in time. But
what you're referring there is in the summer of 2010, I had reached my boiling point with the lack of technology available in Final Cut 7 in regards to being able to address RAM and address cores and stuff like that. And that's when I started working with Adobe Premiere for about 4 to 6 months.
But I think coming back to your question, I think that, you know, what made me embrace that when I saw you using Final Cut 10, I was surprised because you had been quite vehement on following that. But for me, watching you use Final Cut, I use, you know, for a lot of little things that I do myself, I even use iMovie. And the metaphor for Final Cut is, you know, it's iMovie on steroids. So I was very familiar with, at that time, the metaphor that they had. It's changed somewhat over time. Or I observe, actually, iMovie has chased it. So they have some, you know, you would believe that they were in some way related, you know, maybe not on the mother's side. So I think that I saw that, okay, that's interesting. And I think I saw capabilities that, you know, I knew I had the ability with a lot of challenge and difficulty to deliver when I was using Final Cut 7 to be able to deliver in that familiar, comfortable iMovie-like experience. And for me, Final Cut 7 was always a challenge because I'm an infrequent user of the tool. And not only infrequent, but a casual user. So the sort of muscle memory of remembering shortcuts and everything to do wasn't there. So we went Final Cut 10. I thought, gee, I may be more efficient here. And I embraced Final Cut 10 very quickly because it was a familiar metaphor from iMovie. Okay, and I could be more efficient.
I want to talk about that because what you're bringing up is what you see as a feature many people, many professionals see as a detriment, okay? Being tied to what you're saying is the metaphor of iMovie, being tied to iMovie really, frankly, annoys a lot of people. And I think that, frankly, if you go back to some of the first episodes of this show, I did a talk with Alex Golner from England, and he explained how in the lead up to the 10.1 release of Final Cut 10, that you could see that there was code inside of the newest iMovie that was a precursor to what was coming in 10.1 that was not part of 10.0. What part of, and I just want to break this down because I do think that this is, it's an issue with some people. What part of Final Cut 10 feels like iMovie to you?
Well, I think if you look at Final Cut 10, and I can't remember what release we're at now. Are we at 10.1? And also, if you look at iMovie, I mean, Final Cut has sort of, you know, evolved over time. iMovie has evolved as well, and iMovie now looks like baby Final Cut. You know, for me, you know, the concepts of projects, events, the timeline, you know, dragging things through compared to the, you know, the previous very sort of file-centric bins in Final Cut that I would move things to. It was, for me, that made me more comfortable. I could see if you were working on bigger, more voluminous works with more media and more assets that you needed to manage, that could be a challenge. For me, it was more convenient because I already had that, and it's without having to learn it, it has, what's the design concept? So the design concept of affordance, that if I pick up a hammer, I would never need a manual because I would kind of know what to do with it. Or, you know, a great design of stuff that has that affordance that I know what to do. I do feel if I look at, you know, Final Cut, I can fondle, I didn't mean to say that. I can fumble my way. I think it's because our knees are touching. I could fumble my way around Final Cut thinking probably this is where I would go to do this. There are some exceptions. I have used the voiceover function, for example, which appears to be the most illogical place that you could ever put something. It seems to be a random afterthought. But generally speaking, I find that, oh, I want to do this. It's probably here. It's there.
I think one of the best indicators of great software is can, like you said, you're calling it affordance. Can you figure it out without having to go to some sort of a manual? And I think that one of the biggest difficulties that software developers have when you're building a very deep software piece of software is as you start adding features, where do you put them? Eventually, stuff gets obfuscated in another menu or another option or another preference because the request is there to add that feature, but the simplicity or the elegance of the initial design concept has to be modified.
I agree. And, you know, I work in the software field. We have all of that at those issues from a usability and user experience issue. I think when you look at a tool like Final Cut, it's there are an immense amount of at-the-fingers capabilities. So all of the complexity comes out to the surface. You know, there's a tremendous amount of stuff happening under the covers in rendering video and doing a lot of you know, processing to do that. But there are thousands of things that I can access through the user interface that I need to access on a reasonably frequent basis. I agree. And I think that when you know, Final Cut 7 had thousands of things also. The thing with Final Cut 7, I can remember I still have on my desk in my office at home, a rubber keyboard overlay with all the markers for Final Cut 7 and whatever. But now when I use Final Cut 10, I don't bother with that. I just, I'm there. I've also, you know, had my iPad as a surface to have more things on. In reality, for me, I tend to find I just fumble my way around and get through without those things. But so for me, And I don't have a frame of reference, as I didn't sort of have a dabble in the Adobe product. Although I guess with the Creative Cloud that I subscribe to, probably I could. Yeah. It's something I'm comfortable with, and I think what I've seen that impresses me from my perspective, it may not be going at a rate for a professional that's desirable, is the rate of innovation and new capabilities that are coming into Final Cut impresses me. So I think that's good.
No, I mean, that's definitely important that the software keeps getting, you know, pushed and developed. Although I will say our friend Richard Taylor, who was on a past episode, he now has a link on his blog that is a countdown, or a count up rather, from the last upgrade. And I believe we're somewhere at around the 110, 112 days, which is actually the longest it's ever been since an upgrade. And so we're currently at the 10.1.1, looking for 10.1.2. Not sure what we're going to find in that, but yes, it does get upgraded often. So in your own experimentation and playing and working, what type of videos are you editing in Final Cut 10?
I think as a keen amateur, let's use that term to do it. A broad range of things. So let me give you a few examples. So when I travel, I try and capture snippets of video of things that I see and do. So sometimes it's just putting together little pieces that I may want to share with friends that way, or more expensive travel pieces. I've certainly, my family is distributed a bit around the world, so I have made more feature-length travelogues, for lack of a better term. And again, even as an amateur making things, the frame of reference people have is, well-produced TV and the Discovery Channel. So, I personally am very sad if my own material is not at least 10% towards that level of production, and I'll settle at 10%, because perfect is the enemy of good. But, also things I've, played around. I got a drone, put my GoPro on that, so it's interesting to add that. And I found, for example, that adding helicopter soundtrack always makes any drone video more impressive and more powerful.
What's your favorite helicopter soundtrack? What kind of helicopter?
I would always like
a Huey.
I would always go for the Huey, the big blades. To breaking the sound barrier, and that's what we need to get. And also just a little bit of that. I think it's 400 hertz of, so that you're listening through the headset of the aircraft to that. It's just a very credible noise, and people think, "Wow, did you get that out of a helicopter?"
Well, yes, of sorts.
Yeah, of sorts. So all manner of things. So I it's mainly, for lack of a better term, home videos, travelogues, and then things that I'm just creatively interested in seeing. For example, went and shot with a couple of cameras in Santa Barbara, in California, my hometown, an event that didn't necessarily interest me per se, but it was intriguing, and it was it was an event called Thrill the World. So all around the world, lots of people were going to go and do the Michael Jackson Thriller dance. And it was good probably to keep those people off the street doing that particular day, having a look at them. They should do it all the time to avoid any other damage they're doing. But I went down and filmed that, and actually I used the multicam. Actually, I got some video off.
Yeah, I watched that.
Yeah. Not a finished piece, but just testing it, playing with it, seeing what that worked out like.
And how did it work?
It worked very well. I think that, if I did it for a living, I'd spend more time and be better at it.
Do you take advantage a lot of the, connect to iTunes, connect to iPhoto? Do you use those features in the effects browser?
I do. And I think that, one of the things, again, for me that I really like in Final Cut is it really is one homogenous experience with all of the other media and all of the other apps and everything else that I do. And I have an interest in sound recording, so I record sound. I work in Logic on that, and it's easy to move between those vehicles. One frustration for me is that I keep my music in the iCloud, and Final Cut doesn't see that. I've figured out a workaround for it, but it is frustrating to me that I can't select music out of the collection.
Go into more detail about that. What are you referring to?
If you have your music in the iCloud, and maybe if you can solve this problem for me, that would be fantastic, and would be fair pay for this excellent session. But the if you put all your music into the iCloud, and the device that you're running Final Cut on is, iTunes, is going out and using iTunes Match to go and get that over the iCloud, then Final Cut does not see the pieces where the media does not sit on the machine. So if all of your media is up in the cloud, then Final Cut doesn't do it. Initially, what I did was just put an image of all of my music back onto the local machine, which I'd rather not do. I like the idea of keeping it in the cloud. And what I've finally done is put a playlist together with all of those pieces, and now I can go and pick it out of the playlist. So I have one huge playlist with 20,000 tracks in it, and I do it that way. But that does seem like a frustration to me.
Well, I think... So this is interesting. This is a crossover between the... no pun intended, avid hobbyist and a pro. I mean, you're expecting, so like, for example, the look at your iTunes, look at your iPhoto. I would never in a million years consider using those features. And I think the reason I don't is because our projects, which live on hard drives, will move from computer to computer. So if I'm accessing a piece of media that's outside of my job folder, that's a bit of a problem. Now, that being said, I would imagine, and I haven't even thought about this because, again, I wouldn't look at that feature to use it. If you are using 10.1 or 10.1.1 and you're saying leave media in place, that could be really bad. I don't know. Maybe it automatically copies it into the library. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I do. So I think that, well, the separate issue is that, first of all, if it's in the iCloud, You just can't see it. But maybe to come to your point, then maybe that, again, that's just a paradigm.
Well, yeah, the iCloud is only part of it, though.
No, I agree, yeah.
Okay.
But I think that, so I understand your point that for your jobs, you want to keep everything related to the job together in one place. And equally, for me, I have a frame of reference where I may want to access anything that I've ever done, so I have a slightly different paradigm there. Notwithstanding that, for both of us, the convenience of having that all, if you're working on multiple machines, all in the cloud would be fantastic. And for you to be able to segment that by job or whatever, I think would address it. I think that's an area where I would expect Apple need to put a bit of effort on evolution of that. You're right, I agree. The frustration I have is probably more related to the fact that I look at stuff that I may want to look at video that I shot of my family maybe 5-10 years ago. You sometimes, I know, we ask you to go back to the archives to find things for narcissistic purposes that we've shot 10 years ago. And for you, it's okay, find the hard disk that we put that on. I would like that all to be in the cloud. But certainly, is it a big issue? No, I've got to work around to it. But I can see that it must be a challenge looking at the integrated thinking around that. And then, I think Apple, between... iMovie and Final Cut are, there's a lot of commonality, a lot of synergy between, iPhoto and Aperture. And Aperture can look at iPhoto libraries, so you can keep them in one place. There's a lot of synergy. I think they're sort of fusing, and I think it's a, for me, I guess I then look at those products that I can be very efficient and do quick and dirty things in the consumer product. Or I can pretend to be more capable than I am with a professional product, and that's where I like to operate.
I think one of the things that's really cool that I have yet to really exploit, but I don't think most people realize it, if you were to shoot a bunch of video on an iPhone and you had iMovie for the iPhone,
yeah.
If you start cutting that video in the iMovie, there actually is a path that you can get to that timeline in Final Cut 10. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. And I have iMovie on my iPhone and have...
It doesn't surprise me
yeah.
that you would. No, essentially what you do is you can... I believe in iMovie you sync the project to your iTunes, and then from iTunes you can pull it out of... Actually, in the user interface, you can pull it out of the iTunes into... the Finder, and at that point, Final Cut 10 can see that, and you can say, open that timeline, or I can't remember the exact syntax.
I'll give that a go. I mean, I would say that, I'm digressing again, that I or some time ago, I went up and spent some time at Laguna Seca, the racetrack up at Monterey, or near Monterey, and shot video, through the day with, DSLR. And I'd gone up with some friends, and on the way back, I sat in the back of the car with my iPad, plugged the little adapter and got sort of the media into that. And before we made our first coffee stop, had put together an excellent, and I mean excellent, video using that tool. And genuinely a very, very watchable, very sensible thing. It's remarkable what you can do just with tools like that now.
Yeah. So you're saying you shot on the DSLR, USB out of that into the iPad,
yeah,
pulling media into iPhoto,
iMovie.
Yeah.
And then, titles, music.
Yeah, and I just want to remind people that we're talking with Gordon Fleming, who is the chief marketing officer at QAD, where he works, not a, video professional. This is why I wanted to talk to you, because your mind is very much in tune to this kind of craziness. One of the things that's nice about you actually using it, or first of all, having access to and also using the same tool that I use, is we actually can collaborate. I made you some template files when you were doing your President's Club.
And, yeah.
So from a collaboration standpoint, how do you use tools in terms of being able to communicate ideas with hopefully just me, possibly other outside vendors?
Well, Chris, we also have in-house, a team working on video as well. So a number of different ways that I use it. So you're right that you've done work where we've asked you to build blocks that I've then put together with more contemporaneous material that we've had on site. So when we've had meetings, overseas or off-site, I've captured bits of video or got someone to capture video, and then pretty quickly just edited those into a baseline with some of the template piece and produce a much more polished piece, which gives people an artificially false view of my capabilities and brilliance. So I like that. Don't let that illusion lapse. But more seriously, from a work perspective, a challenge I often have is that I'm communicating with people who are not building video assets, who are not building pieces every day, and I'm not articulating or describing those to people every day. So very often it's easier to say, hang on, let me just go grab some bits off YouTube, let me get some music, let me put some text here and produce a rough. And I know that that's become sort of a de facto method of operation that I've worked on internally. I do find talking to you that you grasp more easily what's happening, I think, because you're looking at assets. But I know I've shown you prototypes that we've made as well. And those prototypes, for a piece that we actually opened this show with, I just did a rough in 20 minutes on my Mac just to show somebody this is what I was thinking, and we built from that.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about is just the prevalence, and is that a word, prevalence?
Well, prevalence is a word. You may or may not be about to use it correctly.
I think what we're talking about is the fact that this language,
yeah,
of moving images and video, if you will. It's not, obviously it is growing in importance and popularity, but even more so, what is happening is it is becoming accessible to you. Again, you're a senior level person, and you should not have to touch a mouse or open up a timeline or anything. You should not have to be able to do this. And yet by doing it, you streamline your communication process.
Absolutely. And it's, it's not through, it's not a lack of lack, or it's not a desire just to overcompensate on that. It is just far more efficient. And for me to convert something that's in my mind's eye, or to collaborate on coming up with a design, it's much easier to go through some prototypes and say, well, yeah, no, that doesn't work. This does work. Why don't we try this? And I do find that's an interesting area, particularly internally with our teams, that, sometimes the dialogue can inadvertently get to technical and frame rates and aspect ratios and color balancing ahead of, well, hang on, we haven't worked out our message and what we're going to show and what looks good. And you know, that's, I think, a very key thing.
Yeah, what's your line you use? I can't remember if you used it earlier. You say it all the time. That
perfect's the enemy of good.
Yeah.
As opposed to the lazy chameleon.
Yeah. Oh, explain the concept of the lazy chameleon.
Well, I often use this when working with, not yourself, Chris, but other folk that many years ago, I used to work in West Africa when I had a real job as an engineer. And one of my colleagues was very interested in wildlife, and he would produce all manner of animals that he would find in the bush. And he came back one day with a chameleon. And if you've ever seen a chameleon, they are remarkable looking animals. Their eyes are all over the place, and they're just incredible and quite evil looking animals. But of course, we all know that chameleons can change
color.
So of course, we're looking at this chameleon, and Des has the chameleon. He's holding it. The chameleon was this light green color, and the dirt that we were standing on was this red sort of ochre laterite, sort of very iron rich soil, so sort of a rich red soil. And we're going, come on, put him down, get him to change colour, get the chameleon to change colour. And the chameleon, his eyes are looking everywhere. It's behind him, his left eye's backward, his right eye's forward, he's all over the place. So Des puts him down, the chameleon moves his eyes around, finds a bush that's the same colour as him, runs to the bush. I christened him the lazy chameleon because rather than actually do what we wanted to do the heavy lifting, he did the minimum to achieve the same result. If ever I'm talking to any of my teams when we're producing output and I sense that they're pursuing the lowest effort route, I call that being the lazy chameleon.
Yeah, it's actually a good descriptor. So how do you see, actually, let's put it this way. Do you see yourself as a leader, do you see yourself pushing your people... Do you see yourself pushing your people to adopt some of these communication tools, or do you think that you are, I mean, let's face it, you are very technically astute. You also enjoy this. So for you to be able to adopt it and to use these tools, which are not technically your tools, they are not part of your job description, do you see that in the future that this type of communication does become part of the job description?
I think if you're a modern marketeer, if you're a chief marketing officer for a company today, you're responsible for making sure that you're using the correct medium and the correct approaches for taking your message to market. The many manifestations and evolutions of video and moving picture assets, whether they're on the web or on a screen or on devices that or strange panels in strange places. They're evolving all the time. You need to make sure that you can guide and direct a group to do that. Do you have to have a deep knowledge of the technologies yourself to do that? No, you don't have to. But you do need to make sure that you have a team in place that can do that. I personally happen to be connected to that and enjoy it, as you say, myself, so I'm happy to do it. Maybe as a corollary to that, though, if I look at some of my peers in other companies, I do see an effect where sometimes they know they have to do this. They don't really understand both the technology or approach. They don't have a team that's built that can embrace that. And so therefore their solution is to wholly outsource that. And I put it almost as the make something creative and brilliant issue. The challenge I see with that time and time and time again is your message from a marketing perspective, the thoughts that you want to convey, they're very uniquely yours.
Hopefully.
If you completely outsource it, you're...
QAD, it's the real thing.
Exactly.
QAD, the ultimate software machine.
That's right. Just do it.
Right.
And I never said that, but if you completely outsource it, if you abrogate your responsibility to that, the chances are that you produce something that's visually at best interesting, but probably off-message and ineffective. I also see people sometimes, completely abrogating it. I went to another customer's conference, not a customer, I beg your pardon, a conference of an organization that's remained nameless a while ago.
How did you pull that off?
And just trickery.
Did you use your name? Or did you go by something?
There wasn't a competitor.
Oh, okay.
And they had spent big on production, which I know you always encourage, Chris. They had put a lot of effort into it and produced just a terrible experience that was off message and very incoherent, and actually some of it just was very low in quality of production. I felt I could aspire to produce this. So one of the many things that you do with for us, Chris, is the Faces or Happy Faces reel that we show, and I think you are a master of the craft of this and have a great formula behind it. I've seen some terrible, terrible Faces shows that are just badly put together, and they've been badly put together by people who do it for a living.
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, there are multiple philosophies and theories behind doing a good Faces show, and I think that even though there are multiple, you know, ways of going about it, there are many people that don't even think about it at all.
Yeah.
Next shot, go.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna break into a very forced but genuine, heartfelt commercial here. Have you ever used the music from Premium Beat? Premiumbeat.com?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so all basic, I think all the music for the five customer testimonials that we used, that I made for you at this conference, were all Premium Beat. And they sponsor this show. I don't know if you know that. And I know everybody else does because you hear me talk about this all the time. But I genuinely, like, really love their music because, one, it's written in such a way that that it doesn't fight. You know, I mean, all I need a nice, solid background underneath something, but I don't need it to, like, break out into, you know, a giant flourish and take away from the message of what I'm actually cutting. And the other thing that's nice about it is it comes in loops. So, like, you can buy the song, but you can also get what they call a loop set. I think they call it a loop set, maybe loop pack, loop set. And so with the loop set, it's like audio Lego blocks. And you can, like, oh, I want this quiet bit to last longer. And then I, you know, come up to the, you know, the build up a little bit. And it's just, it's really great music. I think they add like 100 songs a month. They turn down composers all the time that want to sell through them because it's very curated. And it's just like, you can usually find something quickly, very, very quickly. And then if, you know, you dig a little more, you'll find that perfect thing too. But there's not a lot of crap on it. And that's what I like about it.
Well, I knew there was going to be something great I would take away from spending time with you today. And Premium Beat sounds like it's a solution to a problem that I have. Because I, you know, I have a very large library of music.
None of which you can legally use.
I didn't say that. No, all of it, I think. And I, you know, I do buy things.
I don't understand.
iTunes,
I paid $1.29 for that Cool in the Gang song. Why can't I use it?
Oh, can't you use it?
No.
Oh, well, that's a shame then. Okay. Well, you know, for personal news. But irrespective of the legality and the intellectual property behind that, which I'm fiercely respect, I have a challenge in finding music for pieces because it's, have I heard anything that will do that? I have got so desperate sometimes, I have typed into Google, good music as background for video on. and that's not a very effective way to do it. So it sounds like Premium Beat is the perfect solution.
Definitely take a look at it. They sponsor the show. I actually sought them out. And I had turned down other people and I wanted them to sponsor.
So you're turning down sponsors?
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to work.
Well, no. There were people that said, hey, we'd like... okay, yeah.
Like Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, they right, wanted... Okay. Yeah. But anyway, so that's it. Thank you, Premium Beat. And if you have not looked at them, please go look
at
them.
Premium Beat, I will personally be looking at Premium Beat now. Any preferential memberships I can get? No.
No, it's no membership.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, no membership. Anyway, so commercial over. You can now turn your volume back up. Future, where do you see the importance of in terms of hiring people in corporate America? Are you actually looking for people that have rudimentary skills, or do you think that that plays a part in future hires for you?
So I don't think necessarily that I'm... I think that you have to be getting people who've, you know, have, you know, graphics and multimedia degrees that have used the tools at college. I think you have to have people that realize the possibilities. You know, a great example, I I can remember talking to somebody a number of years ago, and they were saying, oh, I really want my kids to have, you know, iPads in the school that they go to, so that they're using the latest technology. And, you know, I said to them, I said, when I went to school, fax machines didn't exist. Okay, what you really want is people that can embrace new technology.
Maybe use new technology.
If you're using new technology at school, guess what? When you grow up, that's old technology. So you need people that can embrace change and can do that. The event that we've just been at, Chris, and you've done a whole lot of video assets for us, and we've done a lot of stuff in-house. I had my team, you know, very diverse group, go off as some sub-projects to go and build some little video caselets that we used here. And it was interesting to see their approach to doing that. We used our own cast, as it's cheaper than stock video. We used our own premises because they look beautiful and it sort of adds the background. But it's interesting to see how, you know, of that group of people in my organization who are in their, you know, 20s, really don't see why they could not produce a high quality piece. And, you know, to flatter you, if I may, Chris, because we work with you a lot and we see the quality of work that you do, I think that the bar is already quite high for us. I don't think we've necessarily reached that bar.
You're talking about the 7 pieces for Pam's Prisa. Yeah. I thought they were fine. They were great.
They're fine. Good luck.
They were okay. Yeah. No, I didn't. When Ashley came to me and said, Gordon's off the rail. He wants to add 7 more pieces for the show. I was like, I don't have the time. I mean, we were.
Turning business away.
What do you do?
But bottom line is that, coming back to your question, do you need people that can use the tools? No, but you need people that understand, right, okay, how people who are going to experiment and take some risks with this new technology, this new approach, this new method of communicating. And people are thinking, well, why would I not be able to direct and go and produce something? And, you know, we did a couple of tongue-in-cheek things and, you know, the team had a lot of fun going off and building that and flying drones around and doing stuff. You need to have that. What doesn't work today is, you know, for someone to come and say, well, look, I'm a marketing communication specialist. No, I don't do video. I do words or I
specialize in brochures.
Yes, I'm a brochure specialist.
I go for the triple fold. It's my real strength.
Full color offset litho is the zenith, and I think
that's the zenith of my technology. Yeah.
You can't do that. So definitely you need to get people that can think, yes, I can address it. And, you know, the other thing that, you know, having tools like, you know, Final Cut and iMovie Candle in your desk is that it brings makes all these things a lot more accessible. So I think if you'd sat me years back in front of a sort of, you know, proprietary edit suite and said, go, I'm not sure much would have come out of that process. You know,
yeah, it was totally different and much more difficult, sure.
But with, you know, nonlinear editing tools like Final Cut today, then not quite, but, you know, almost a monkey like me can and have a fair chance of producing something.
I love what you said. And frankly, I want to just go on record. Jim, Bob, and Justin, if you guys are listening, and anybody else, maybe Mark was involved, the 7 videos that you did for Pam's Prisa were great.
Yeah.
I do not want to slight those at all.
Many people involved, and they are just exquisite pieces of video.
And I love what you say. It's like these people should look at it and go, well, why can't we do this? You know, I mean, that's potentially bad for people like me that do it only that only do this for a living. But in terms of what is capable and what is possible, it is a whole new era.
I think it's, you know, 2 things I'd say. I think that, you know, the difference between the amateur product and, you know, professional product, the gap is closing. But it's a bit like photography, and photography is a great interest of mine as well. And as you know, Chris, I'm interested in many things around this space. One facet of that is gear. I always feel that if I had more gear, that might address it. But, you know, my observation on taking great photographs is a lot of that is being in front of something that's interesting and photo worthy, and thinking about composing that photograph. And a lot less of it is about the gear. So I think that what things like Final Cut do is they remove the constraints of just not being able to do it. then the issue is the experience and just then the creative ingenuity of people to do it. And I'd observe that, you know, my team that produced those videos had just great creative ingenuity, and you know, we also have great in-house skills around video that were leveraged as well. So we produced a brilliant quality output.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this. I'm not going to give too much contact information about you because I don't want anybody listening to this to start hounding at your door and stealing you as a client. No, I'm
kidding. No, although we are receiving bids in our reverse auction.
But anyway, I have thoroughly enjoyed working with you over the years, and hopefully this one is not the last of those.
And QAD, our passion is your advantage, and Slice, putting the opinion back in video.
Thanks, Gordon.
Thanks, Chris.
So that's Gordon. I hope you enjoyed that. I tell you, in looking back, we mentioned that that video from South Beach. No, not North Beach, South Beach. It was an amazing time. We had a camera. John Butera was shooting a standard def DV camera on his shoulder, and we were running around South Beach with a sun gun and a wireless mic, and Gordon would just see something and go, oh, I want to do that. And we'd walk over, and he'd interject himself into a conversation, or we'd chase down limos on the road. And it was really an amazing night to be a part of. And then I took the footage back to my room and I cut it overnight. And it was like one of these things that just, it cut like butter because his performances were so good. And, what else? Just the people of South Beach and the city of South Beach is just, insane. But anyway, I don't recommend taking a camera crew with a non-professional talent out into a city without a script, but in this particular instance, it actually worked quite well. So thanks for listening to the show. I also want to thank you so much for your comments on iTunes. Those definitely help the show, and it's always great to hear what people have to say. One last thing. If you go to the Digital Cinema Cafe website, where both of these podcasts are hosted, on the right-hand side is a little blue tab, and that blue tab offers you the ability to send comments and questions or complaints into me, and that works for either Final Cut Grill or Digital Cinema Cafe. So if you use that tab, you click on it, it'll open up a little flash recorder, and you can use the microphone on your computer to leave comments. So I would welcome you to do that. And maybe we'll do, maybe if we gather up a bunch of questions, we'll do like a whole Q&A show. So that's it for this episode. We will see you next time on the Final Cut Grill. Later.